Wiggly World 131.
It's never straight up and down.
It's never straight up and down. It's never straight up and down. It's never straight up and down. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. 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 Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle.
A Wiggly World, a Wiggly World. Hey, everybody! Hello, friends. Thank you for joining me. I'd like to take a moment here and thank all of the listeners that made it through my last 4.5-hour episode. So I'd like to just take a moment to do that. Thank you, Oliver and Mike. I think that's everybody. Last episode, I focused mainly on my process of my search for the truth within the confines of Christianity from when I was about 12, when I first started trying to test truth, find out what and why I believed. And then, it was a long process. It went well into my early 20s. So it's quite a documentation of that process. Now, although the people that I made this for, to answer their questions of you cannot have once believed, you must still believe, and then Satan's clouding your memory or blocking neurons, and of course they wouldn't say that, but this was my answer to them, because I would constantly be asked, well, how could you used to have faith and now you don't? That's impossible. You still have faith. And number one, I think that's a horrible premise. There's many things that just about everyone has believed at one time to which they no longer subscribe to as truth. I'm sure, I would hope, you're quite an oddball. At least, OxiClean really works great. I believe that. I'm buying it. Hey, I still have stains in my clothes. You know what I mean? There's got to be something where it showed that you used to have faith in something and now you didn't. And then I also went through explaining, I think, how I no longer even use the word faith. Yeah, because I have confidence in things. I don't really have faith in them. I formulate hypothesis or I have conjecture that drives me. But faith really plays little to no. It's not in my vocabulary anymore, except as just another word. But that, pardon me, I'm going through to change. My balls just dropped. That episode that became quite like a little road bump. Because there was so much that happened between the time that I did the episode before last episode that I really needed to talk about. I want to talk about it. It was fresh on my mind. Of course, I didn't write it down. I have no idea what it was. So today I sit before you with, once again, nothing. I have a blank sheet of paper before me in case I mention something in my many branching pathways that I want to comment upon deeper in this episode. Hopefully this episode won't be too long. I got a bartend later on at Sloppy Joe's. I'm really jonesing to get that. Photos have been falling off the wall in Sloppy Joe's. I need to use nails as the industrial strength adhesive is not holding to those walls for some reason. And congratulations, there's our first branching pathway. But it was a stumbling block because there's so much I had to say, and just trying to set aside time to do that 4.5-hour thing, which I had no idea was going to take that long. I thought, 2 hours tops, man. But, it was something quite important to me, obviously, as I found out. And it was quite a long process. It wasn't just, snap at a finger. And I just want to go the opposite of what I used to believe. I'm rebelling, that type of thing. It was quite a heady topic. If you don't know, the East Coast, and I'm not sure if this is the same all across the United States, in Germany, abroad, who knows. We've had a quite a large amount of rainfall and a large amount of snowfall towards the end of the season, which has made this pollination period quite stretched out here in the spring here. So the pollinating process is quite long, and as a consequence, as a result of this, my sinus has just been going in completely mental, and so pardon my verklemptness of inadvertent verklemptness. Well, yeah, so now I have to try to figure out what it was. I have no idea. I have some letters here, two from the people that listened to last episode, and one new one from Young Dens, someone quite entangled with my media venture here on the podcast. But for those of you new to A Wiggly World Show, I just like to tell you a little bit about myself. At one time, I was a fertilized egg in a fallopian tube. I then divided into two and four, and then I kept squaring. Made my way down and implanted myself in the uterus. As a cell ball, I generated my own placenta. And eventually, I became an embryo. I started to get some organs and stuff. And to make a long story short, I graduated high school and I started working at Kmart. Now I sit on the other end of your electrical eargasm vibra box as an aerobic organism. I respirate, I metabolize, and basically discharge electrical energy into my snoodle box and out my yam hole. If you want to find out everything I'm involved with, just go to wigglysworld.com. There you will find links to some of my artwork. I think I even have like a DeviantArt account. I don't know. I don't keep up on that too much because why? No one wants any of my stuff. So, you know, what am I going to do? There's also links to my music on iTunes and CD Baby. As a matter of fact, I learned that one of my more popular songs, Project Y, wasn't working in the iTunes store, and that's since been remedied. So it is up there. It is up there, and I believe if you have a bad copy, you can go to download it again, and it should say, you already own this. Do you want to download it again? You say yes, and then that'll replace it. Now, in case you do get charged a 99 cents, well, thank you very much in advance. I hope to be releasing some more album-y work as well. I definitely have a lot of music in me, but there's still some just things in my noodle that are coming up and in my life. I mean, basically, I used to live in a chicken coop for I don't even want to think about it. 15 years, 20 years. Wow. In this chicken coop, I had no running water, and I would have to go out of the house and across the yard and down into the basement of another house, my mother's house, and use the restroom, and that's where my kitchen was as well. And this was just to be, of course, a temporary transitional living arrangement, which then my stepdad died, and I, you know, tried to take care of my ma, and it just It's a story that is more and more common now in our current climate and economy in the United States, whereas this is something that would happen in European countries a lot more often, where the children would take care of their more dependent parents, or, you know, they didn't even have to be dependent. It just was, you know, a cultural type of choice. But now my wife and I, we have a lovely trapdoor mansion. It is situated in beautiful Easton, Pennsylvania, where I just had to pause the show for about 20 minutes of sirens going and coming. And the worst is when you hear all these fire trucks and everybody else and, you know, cop cars and meat wagons going down the road. I live on Northampton Street, which is one of the main thoroughfares in Easton here. We're a little up from the main city, if that's what you want to call it. It's sort of like a circle. You know, it has one of these circles in the middle, and then there's a couple like a theater that does plays and musical groups and Pat Benatar and a little dance studio and, you know, things like this, little tchotchke shops and nicer, neater, cool restaurants with unusual menus and stuff like this. And Drinkies, Drinkies McDrinkersons is what we call it. Drinkies Bar is also down there. So we get a lot of, you know, sirens going up and down. But it's the worst when you're like, ah, these sirens. And then you look outside and they're in front of your house. So, and just over the past maybe 2 months, there were two shootings. One where a person got shot. He turned out to be one of the actors in some type of, you know, drug deal type of thing. He was up the block and back of us a couple clicks, and then just a few blocks up again, someone was shot at, but the person that did that was from Allentown, so there you go, whammo, Easton's in the clear, but you can get shot at, it's, you know, it's fun, it's part of the things that keeps you in shape around here, dodging bullets. But our house is just, you know, unbelievable. Anyone that's visited knows that it's like a mansion that's dropped right in the middle of nice homes and not so nice homes. So, like, just in our alley, we have this beautiful little yard that goes up. And if you're back there, there's a little pond with the goldfish and whatnot. And you would think that you're somewhere, not necessarily in the country because it's a very small yard, but definitely not near a city at all. But then one tiny little yard away is an alley just full of row homes, and then row homes and row homes and row homes in the alleys in back of us. To the left of me is more Victorian homes, and immediately to the right of me is Victorian homes. So it's quite odd. Across the street, directly across the street, and it's only a two-lane highway, is an old administrative building for a school. Which I don't. If I had to put a year on that, oh geez, I don't know if I could. I mean, it looks like at one time it could have been some type of town meeting place, perhaps around, you know, the early 1900s. And then right next to that, across a tiny parking lot, is the Hillbilly Shack, I like to call it. And only recently did I realize that this Hillbilly Shack is like an extension of a more traditional Victorian type of house. Probably, I would say, around 1920, maybe. You know, maybe earlier. So it's really cool. It's really neat. It's a great little area. A lot of foot traffic goes by, a lot of foot traffic up the alley, a lot of working class Americans. So, but the home is, there's a lot of work here. I now it's spring, it's time for spring cleaning. We're finally almost entirely out of our old home. There's still some straggling garbage stuff that needs to be picked up, but for the most part, we're out of there. We made a trip last weekend, I think, and really gutted it for the most part. There's still some, like I said, garbage things and big things, but it's taken a long time. I had a lot of stuff, and now all that stuff needs to be gone through and either disposed of or put in its proper place. And since last time as well, I've started a new hobby. For those of you that don't know, I do show called We Talk Games. It's a lovely project. I'm very, very happy with that project. I enjoy doing it so much. And we talk about games, and we talk to people from the industry and enthusiasts. And I think we have a very special show. It's very unique, and I don't hear any other show like it on the internet or on television or on the radio, which, you know how popular video game shows are on the radio. But I had, in the past, built my own little arcade machine that has emulators and everything else. Of course, I own all the original ones that I emulate. All 1,800 arcade machines, of course, I keep them in my basement, buried under the earth. You would have to dig with a backhoe to find them, but they're there. They're down there, I'm sure. And some I keep at junkyards across the United States. See, now there's how you could get out of it. Because I'm sure throughout junkyards across the United States, somewhere there must be one of those machines buried. And now I've recently been getting into future pinball and visual pinball. And if you go to vpforums.org, you can find out what I've been getting myself into there. And building a little table with a back glass and everything. It's been a lot of fun. These are things I do in my spare moments between other work I'm doing. And, you know, of course, my compulsive type of personality. I don't know if there's a name for it. I'm not sure. I know it's most likely all part of my manic states and my bipolar disorder and things like this. But I think it also is what makes me a great technician, is that the only thing I get hung up on is when things don't work. I like to get things to work. I also like, I've mentioned before, it's more about the collecting than it is about, playing things or cheating people out of, big corporations out of anything. I don't try to do new things. I try to do things that are no longer available. I mean, there's just certain things that you're no longer going to be able to get. There's no way I can afford these old electromechanical pinball tables, or even know how to fix them up. So in order to enjoy this art that was pinball, even before stories and before you have to go through here to get this, to get, light up this and then get multi-ball and then do this, do that, electromechanicals were just for sheerly the skill and fun of playing pinball. And there's just no way I'm going to be able to experience that due to budget, due to space, due to the limitations of the availabilities of some of these machines. So emulation is a way that you can do this, and the same goes for video games. There's just no way I'm going to be able to play the Fonz, because, you know, these machines were destroyed because they weren't that great. But now let's get into the unpopular voice of Wiggly. A lot of other things have happened in the world around us, and those things are lost to me. Hopefully some of them might come back, but of course, some of the biggest news was Osama bin Laden being taken out of the equation. This is something that I have spoken about before. This is something, I mean, even when I was doing a pro wrestling podcast, of all things, I brought up the fact that, you know, we were in a war through an entire administration and in two parts of an administration, and then into a third, and far into a third. We're almost at our fourth iteration of a presidential term, where we still have ongoing wars with these nations that we were drawn into by, of course, the events that went down on, transpired on 9/11, and the wanting to take out Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda and things like this. So finally, he was taken out in a covert operation by a group of a small number of actives. And that is the exact type of precision exercise that I wasn't alone in this, but I felt that this should have been dealt with in the first place. This is the exact type of initiative that could only work, really, other than getting to people close to him and, having double agents or whatever. And then as the war went on, it was learned that getting Osama bin Laden was never the initiative. Weapons of mass destruction were never thought that they were going to be found. You know, it was amazing, the turn of events. But, of course, what struck me most surprisingly was after we learned of his execution, there was dancing in the streets and, you know, a rise to patriotism, American flags being waved around, everything shy of footage of Osama being burnt in effigy. And these are the exact same type of things that we see from the people that don't have access to full stories. Are subjugated people that protest against the United States. I mean, whenever we were shown things to help us want to, bring justice in American way to the Middle Eastern countries that we are attacking, we are shown footage of, you know, people hitting Bush in the face with their shoes and burning the American flag and, you know, all this other type of insanity, moronic things, but they are a little more justified in their ignorance of not being exposed to what we have access to. Not necessarily the truth, not necessarily anything like that. You know, of course, people can think for themselves all around the world, but sometimes you don't realize you have those options. We are afforded those freedoms, and here we are acting this out like this. And, you know, it's one thing to celebrate, would people have been tap dancing in the street if Hitler would have been murdered? Maybe. But to me, this wasn't the case at all, because this whole scenario, it just seemed disrespectful to me that 50,000 plus of our teenagers were murdered in what was to be the pursuit of this person initially that drew us into this war. And to me, it seemed disrespectful to celebrate in this fashion. And it seemed below what you would expect from people that enjoy our freedoms. Certainly, we have every right to be happy. I said when we were told that killing Osama bin Laden wouldn't mean anything, I said, what are you talking about? You know, he is a figurehead. He was targeted supposedly as the mastermind behind it. And I say supposedly because that's what he said he was behind it, the 9/11 incident, and so many more. So saying when Bush came out and said that, you know, he's no longer a target, it wouldn't matter. I said that's completely ridiculous. It's part of the healing process, I would believe, to people affected by this and who wasn't affected by it. I mean, we all were. But the key word, well, number one, that was one of the bits that upset me. It affected me. The dancing in the streets and the celebrations and the yay, we got 'ems and things like that. I mean, like I said, it's something that needed to happen, and it did happen. But the second part of this story is that people were, and Mayor Rudy Giuliani, finally, justice is done. And the news, justice is done, and justice is done. But when I found out that he was murdered, or whatever you want to call it, vengeful killing or whatever, or, you know, it doesn't really matter what you call it. But when he was murdered, there was a sense of relief, and there's a balance struck there between that a terrible minded person who has a lot of influence is removed from the equation, but also the sense that no justice was done at all, because the guy is dead. How can you extract justice from a dead person? You cannot. He is not going to stand trial for his atrocities. Now, did Saddam Hussein understand that he was being brought to justice. I don't know. I don't think it was prolonged enough for him to have any type of balance there with his atrocities. Is there even any way to have not feel justified when you're such a tyrant, when you're so delusional, perhaps even psychotic? I would think you'd have to be psychotic to believe the things that you're doing when you're the acts are so despicable. But I certainly think that time before execution, to even though we're paying for it, I mean, we've already paid a lot and continue to pay. Isn't it $1 trillion or over $1 trillion? I don't feel like looking it up. I know it's far more costly in the lives of our teenagers for, you know, the reasons that weren't... We went into these wars under false pretenses and continue to be there under false pretenses and even entering new conflicts. So I don't think justice was done. I think that's a horrible deception. I think it's just another instance of the media never thinking about and public in general not thinking about what comes out of their mouth. And I like to try to take time and think about what comes out of my mouth. And that's all. And if I would have gotten a chance to go behind a mic the Tuesday after this occurred, my voice would have been a lot more unpopular. But now that we're separated by 2 weeks, probably not so much. Now, the focus of A Wiggly World, from its offset, was just to be an outlet for me to riff. And over the course of these episodes, what am I up to? I know I said at the beginning of the show, but I don't record that until the end of the show. 130-some episodes. I've talked about a lot of different things. The most prevalent topic that will come into just about every episode of A Wiggly World, of course, is religion, and especially the Christian religion, because it's something that I'm interested in. It's something that I that shaped my life so much, or at least I thought it was. I didn't realize that I was shaping my own life and clinging on to the elements of Christianity that coincided with my own moralities. And then deeper into my research, of course, realizing that there was a lot more there that, of course, flew in the face of not only my moralities, but weren't just ignorant to what vibrated more with reality, the closest we could get to reality, but didn't just go against it, but was willfully ignorant to the point of hating reality, maybe? Okay. So, but I talked about a lot of other things as well. And I've also, you know, I've Twittered, I tweeted, I've MySpaced, I've Facebooked, and I really haven't done too many quotes. Today I put up a quote by someone else. By Oscar Wilde, of all people. And but I really mostly just quote it myself. The problem is with Twitter and Facebook is that a lot of times perhaps it wasn't known that the quote was from myself because so many people quote other people. And I don't know what those quotes were anymore. some of them. Pretty much all of them. I don't know what I've said that I think were possibly quotable bits. I've like the tear and repair workout. I don't know if that ever made a quote, and I don't know if I've ever said it. But that's sort of my workout routine. Where I show the most results is when I tear and repair. So it's sort of like people getting pumped up. They do the rubber bands before wrestlers do. They do the rubber bands before they go out. And, of course, they oil up as well to make it shiny and look like bigger muscles. But if I want to look jacked up, maybe the day or two before an event, I'll really push myself beyond what I should, and it tears the crap out of my muscles, and then so I'm all swelled up like I got stung by a bee when I go to that event. But pretty much that's my only workout, and I do this quite often, is tear and repair, because I have very strong red twitch muscles. Very, very strong, I believe, as opposed to doing, you know, a lot of reps. So the only way I really build my strength, but not my endurance, of course, is by the tear and repair. I've also talked about ghosts and the ghost energy. I've talked about God energy. I've talked about the results that I've talked about the energy needed for ghosts to occupy this reality with us. The energy needed for a God to know everything in the universe. Those energies are just far too great to be of any benefit, they would consume every energy needed for this whole universe to exist, and there would be no energy left over for these stupid results of, you know, walking around like, duh, I'm scaring you, duh. Thanks for being helpful, ghost. You know, the energies required for it to keep up with the rotation of the Earth, to keep up with the orbit, to keep up with being able to look like it's walking on the same, you know, floor that we walk on, and to give us absolutely nothing. And this is beyond what we know of physical existence. This is beyond biology. This is beyond you know, cosmology and all this other business. Any of the sciences, you know, any of the measuring devices, this is just strictly on the level of a ghost. Ghost energy, God energy, just too great for the horrible actions, or not personifications, physical results, manifestation. For the manifestations we get out of these things, which is none except in our own minds, the energy required for that is just ridiculous and stupid, basically. I've also talked about my just out of my ass theory of the expanding universe and the speeds at which it's going, tracing back to the Big Bang, and also, you know, things I see echoed in other by other people, and that is, you know, why does everybody think the Big Bang was the start of everything? Perhaps it was the start of this universe that we are occupying now. But before the thing didn't bang, and before it was not big, which the Big Bang, of course, is the exact opposite of what it was. It was small and didn't make any sound. It was incredibly small. It was so dense, the entire universe, and the energy released by it was intense. That was big, the big energy. But it started from a very small thing. But before that, why wasn't there a little bang, and then it just like rubber band, you know, until it finally was, you know, sprung back upon itself and then exploded and then sprung back, and it keeps trying and trying and trying, and finally we get this one now that is set in such a motion that it is expanding as far as we know and increasing in speed. What if there is some type of bubble to the outside where we have some type of centrifugal forces acting upon this Big Bang expansion? Though that is an element that I've never heard discussed before, as centrifugal forces acting on the universe from outside. I've never heard that discussed. I've heard plenty of other things discussed on it, but that would help explain the rapid expansions that we monitor that are observable. If there was some type of spinning going on to this outer area, outer fringe, outer, if you want to say, globe or ball or whatever creates these types of forces. A lot of other areas, I'm sure, that I've explored that I've forgotten about. Dissecting popular television shows. So many ghost shows, so many strange animal shows and things like this that are so very popular. And that's really the only place that ghosts exist, in my opinion, is on these TV shows. And because there's absolutely zero evidence for that. And, you know, when in 87 I was talking about a lot of UFOs, I wrote a lot of songs about UFOs, wrote a lot of songs about Men in Black and things like this before movies came out, before books were published on this. It was just every now and then you get a stream on a bulletin board, on a BB, before AOL came into the picture. And I get printouts of different people posting things on these paranormal BBs. And I'd write about them. And then, you know, later as I went on in my life, I investigated these things further and found out that they are basically solely based on either making money, normal interpretations by human physiology of the world around us, anecdotal information, and all of the main flaws and logic tropes that exist. Spurious data processing, you know, all the flaws in logic. So these are things that I explored before I got to any of my online podcasts and shows and things like this. But what is still popular and what has become increasingly more popular since the Bush administration, as far as what I recognized as coming more to the forefront, has been the change in the religious right and whatever they may be called now. And trying to creep creation science, which is even, I mean, that's just fucking ridiculous. Creationism, you know, these type of things, the influence of religions on policy, these things are what are still out there, and these are the mythologies and the things that need examination now. And that's why so many of my episodes either touch on that at some point or are based entirely around it. Many people are sophisticated enough to, at this point, there are drops in numbers of the belief in UFOs, a belief in, UFOs exist. I've touched on this a lot. I don't want to use the word UFOs, but, you know, flying saucers and visitations from aliens. And I've gone into this at great length. Why do people believe that we are being visited by aliens? Well, we've heard it in television shows where they've said, you know, positive proof of aliens among us. And people give an example. Well, we went to the moon. Why can't aliens come here? And for some reason, the people reporting on this don't report that, well, you know, the moon is about 226,000 miles away. Our sun is 93 million miles away. You know, of course, aliens don't come from our sun, but that's 93 million miles away from us compared to the moon's 226,000 miles. And the nearest other sun-based galaxy, which may or may not support any type of life, is 4.3 light years away. A light year is 5.8 trillion miles. 5.8 trillion miles times 4.3. These numbers are so astronomical. A trillion. A trillion is, you know, our deficit is what, 3 trillion or something like that. A trillion is almost unfathomable. Yet, because you go 100. So let's tie this into years. You go 100, and 100 years is pretty long. Most people don't live 100 years. 100 years from today would be 1911. Now, many of you probably weren't around in 1911. Then you go 1,000. So now you're at 1811, right? Yeah. No, yeah, 1,000 years. Whoops. Yeah, in 19... No, that would be... Yes. Who am I? You would be at the year 1,011, which I don't know what happened in 1,011. Not much, I guess. But I know that the year 1,000 was, of course, wrote with the end of the world type of rhetoric, just like we are about. Oh, that's why another one. That's why I wanted to get this show in, because Saturday is when, of course, Jesus comes back and there's earthquakes, which the earth has never suffered from earthquakes. And let's face it, why wouldn't an almighty God use plate tectonics to show his power? Naturally occurring types of forces involved with plate tectonics, and also, you know, things to do with the jet stream, geo-cooling, natural actions of our atmosphere and the rotation of the Earth and the pitfalls of our proximity to the sun and all these other things that would occur normally, naturally, anyway. Why wouldn't he use all these natural things that would happen naturally? Natural. See, if the stars were made out of fiberglass and the moon was made out of cheese, then I would have more faith in some type of all-powerful deity performing these things. Unfortunately, everything that we observe follows a state of just how you would expect them to if they came about by natural means. But getting back to a billion, so let's not go by years because obviously that confuses me. So you have 100 or something, you know, you count to 100. And well, I've talked about this before. How many years would it take you to count to a million versus how many years it would take you to count to a billion? If you count it one every second, which would be hard to do. You could poop while you're counting, but you couldn't sleep while you're counting. To count to a million would take you about 12 days, but then to count to a billion would take you about 31, 32 years. So that's quite a difference between a million and a billion. And then if you want to take that up to a trillion, well, a trillion's a little more challenging because there's two ways. In Britain, the a trillion is a million million, which is 10 to the 18th. As we know it in the States, I believe it's 10 to the 12th. But no matter what, a trillion would take you anywhere from around 33,000 to 60,000. Around 63,000 years to count to. So you're going to be going for quite a long time. So that's a difference between a million, a billion, and a trillion. So a little over a week for a million, 32 years for a billion, and 32,000. Let's go in the middle, somewhere around 50,000 years for a trillion. So you have that for a trillion. That's counting one every second. And the U.S. debt is actually $4.3 trillion. So you have to do that 50,000 years count and then do that 14 more times to try to wrap your head around exactly how large a trillion is. And then what you have to do is take those trillions and stretch it out to infinity, because that's how much God knows. So you do trillions, not just 14 times, but 100 times, and then a trillion times a trillion. And then you keep going. Then that's not even halfway. That's what infinity is. So, you know, it's just an incredible waste of energy. There's no reason that an all-knowing God would need to know when a snail shits in the woods. You know what I mean? And then not only does he need to know that, but every snail on the world, on this earth, and then any other life that exists out there in infinity as well. You know. So these are factors that we need to think about. And this is also something that I talk about and I think about and we explore here on A Wiggly World, I hope. Let's get into some letters so I can do some. Oh, first I want to say that, you know, I'm an equal opportunity mythological exploratory anal probe. You know, I'm all about any type of mythical study. Be it Greek, be it Roman, be it Sumerian. In fact, if it wasn't for the Sumerian civilizations and the discovery of the cylinder seals and things that happened within the past 100 years and deciphering that happened within the past 60, 70 years, you know, I probably would be a Christian right person, you know what I mean? Those were the things that led me to my exploration into this stuff. Then again, the biggest opposition to the Bible has got to be the Bible itself. Let me just talk about, if you pick up the newest Skeptic magazine, Skeptic, that's the one that comes out of California, as opposed to the one more out of New York, I would think, which is Skeptical Inquirer, both two great magazines. The newest Skeptic has a big look into Muslim creationism, Islam, violence, fart twats, jihad, women's status, current unrest, natural enemies, the myth of the Middle East madman, is Muhammad the most influential person in history, and mythic influences in the Quran. So great. This is stuff that I've started talking about just within the past 2 months when I talked about the Muhammad's night journey, which I love. You know, great story, perfect example of the mythos in the Abrahamic religions, and also, you know, how tribal this stuff really is. So pick up the newish issue of Skeptic. I haven't read in. I just received this in the mail. Mailman just dropped this off, or mail person, or person rather. I guess that's the correct way to say that. Just dropped that off this morning, so I cannot wait to dive in. And let me do it quickly. Here we go. Hi, here goes letters. I haven't done this in so long. All my letters mixed in with my... Oh, that's the other thing. My taxes. If you want to cry, just get taxes as an independent. I owe more money than I have or have ever had at any one time. And I'm in trouble. There you go. Hi, Wiggly. I realize I should have written you a long time ago, but better now than never. Indeed. I just finished listening to your four-hour-long ramblings, and I was very much entertained. It was much like the old days when you would put out the shows more regularly, and I would listen to many of them in a row. I really enjoy, and I'd love to do that. I'd simply love to do that, but as you know, I can no longer just do podcasts. In fact, I really can't afford podcasts at all. The amount of money that I pay for domain names, domain hosting, and just things relating to creating podcasts is driving me broke. I no longer have supporters at all monetarily. And, you know, I don't say that to initiate this. You know, we talk games. I never, to my knowledge, have ever talked about donations. We provide T-shirts and posters and bumper stickers. So the posters and bumper stickers go to my buddy Kyle. The ruminations of those. Of the ones that he paid to make. Go to Kyle. Sometimes he puts it towards my funds for future things. And the things that I pay for production of, I get that money. But That's really not important. What is important is that those things were created so that we could give back something to the public for their donations. And that's pretty much how that runs. And it's more of a walk. I just finished listening. Okay, I like the old days, and I would listen to many of them in a row. I really enjoy listening to you talk. In my view, you handle the bridge between funny and serious in a way that only a few people manage to do as well as you do. Well, thank you very much. Jeez, that's quite kind of you. Now, what I wanted to explain to you is that you are very wrong about one thing in this episode. Not all people's minds are set. In fact, when you cite it, the moments in your youth that made you a skeptic, you must realize that for me, you are one of those moments. I am now 20 years of age, but I started listening to the wrestling podcast I did a long time ago, perhaps 5 years. I really enjoyed you on the show, so I checked out the Wiggly World soon after. And after listening to you, I slowly became a skeptic. I believe you introduced me to the very concept of skepticism. And in turn, I checked out a multitude of skeptical podcasts like Point of Inquiry. Fantastic show. Professional show. And, you know, this is a gabbing show. This is a riffing show. Point of Inquiry is a focused show and a professional show. Or the SGU, but also the Skeptoid. Skeptical Universe, perhaps? Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. That's what that is. But also the Skeptoid. Yeah, I like Skeptoid as well. Since I have also become a vegetarian, wow, due to me, wow, and Peter Singer, whose philosophy I enjoy very much, people may get inspired, but like I said, you got to take everything with a grain of salt and sand in an oyster, and then you get a pearl. Because it's an irritant. So you make the placenta ball in its mouth. Okay. You know, Britney Spears inspires people as well. So anything can inspire. Some lint in your belly button. You can get inspiration. I want to create artificial tumbleweeds that help clean harmful toxins out of nuclear fallout facilities. You know, who knows? You could get ideas from anything. I got to go pee. That might give me an idea for some type of chair piss pot. I don't know. So, I know what you mean by these things, so I don't mean to diminish that at all. But I'm just saying that as a person, of course, I don't get a swelled head about anything because I'm very hard on myself. And which reminds me, you know that saying, can't say something nice about someone, don't say it at all. That includes to your personal chatter about yourself, either in your head or when you do self-deprecating things. Try to put a cap on that. Yeah, it expends energy, but I need to look into that. I need to look into how hard I am on myself. I'm very, very hard on myself. Anyway, vegetarianism, that's very interesting, but you can never change my mind. You can only be yourself and hope that by people seeing your example, setting by example, and some people might latch on to that and some people might not, but you can only be yourself, and that's as much as you can be. So Peter Singer as well, very good. I really just wanted to point that out to you. You really have been a great influence on me, and now I'm welling up a little bit with the crying and my life, and I really admire your ability to talk so informed and at length about a given subject. I usually don't know if I'm right or wrong until people point out and correct me. But I did correct myself on one thing. Some evil theist subscribed to my Twitter, which, by the way, my Twitter sucks balls. I got 248 followers or something like that. Or 420, I'm not sure what it is. How do you measure what you do? You can't compare it to this one email, I know that, but compared to my contemporaries, which I don't want to be, you know, there's so many, I'm never going to riff. There's so many conglomerates out there. Comcast just bought Disney or something. And all that, all those, I don't know, NBC and all these outlets are now one. And it's huge. And you wonder, how can any actor be trusted to what they say because they don't want to be blackballed by this giant conglomerate. You know what I mean? They could ruin their career by saying one wrong thing. I don't want that type of celebrity. Who would? But how are you ever going to get in front of people unless you sell your soul metaphorically to these monopolies? You know what I mean? It's a no-win. It's no-win. Thankfully, I think these outlets like YouTube and like Twitter, you can get those celebrity-like numbers. I don't have them. But Justin Bieber is a perfect example of someone that built themselves up. Now, I don't know what. I don't know anything about Justin Bieber. I know he's famous and he has a doll, but I don't know. I don't know if he signed a contract with somebody or not, but he was someone that was pretty much self-made. You know, so that's pretty amazing. And there are people keeping it real out there, no doubt about it. I really admire your ability to talk so informative and length about a given subject. I could probably go on for much longer, but it will just seem like ass-kissing then. No, it won't, but that's with a winky face. I think, by the way, that you should do a wrestling podcast again. I just want to say right now that my name is Wiggly, and I've been sober from pro wrestling for the past 2.5 months. I have been deleting episodes before I even start them on my TiVo, and if I remember today, I will take them off my schedule. There is nothing for me in it anymore. He says, just make fun of wrestling for 15 minutes a week. You don't have to do any notes or cover the shows. And you know what? That's where I was at before I completely stopped watching it altogether. And I would love to have been on someone else's show. If I didn't have to sit down and do it myself, if I could just called in, you know, on a Saturday, so perhaps just picking that day out of nowhere, not in reference to any type of no vacancy types of shows or anything like that, or any types of one no vacancy shows that might be have the strength of 10 normal no vacancy shows. I would have definitely been there and just crap all over it. He says, I would love to hear that. Well, believe me, there would have been plenty of crap to crap. And I would think of funny things as I was watching back then, especially, I mean, as soon as Hogan came out to be the master, which we knew from the start Hogan was going to be heel, because he wasn't very, you know, he wasn't very subtle about it. Yeah. You know? I know you fans don't want to see the only iconic symbol that separates TNA from the rest of all the other wrestling shows out there. We're going to get rid of the octagon. You know, it's going to be just a standard square ring. So, you know, you knew he was going to be heel from the start. But when he was exposed as the mastermind, that was one of the most unbelievable things of all wrestling history. I mean, if Hulk Hogan would have come out and said, I'm going to be the dumb surfer dude, brother, then I would have believed that. But to believe a diabolical Svengali, no way in hell. The last thing that he would go over as with me. But, you know, all that was gone. You know, the time for that had passed. And then he says, I would love to hear that. I would also assume that any guest appearance on SWF is out of the question for you, definitely. The only way I'd be on SWF again is if all the hosts of it were replaced by other hosts. I would also assume that I would love to see what happens as well. But then again, this is business between you and Joseph Negron. And I can totally understand why you cut yourself loose from the show and you don't want to come back yet. You know, I've often talked about my role with forgiveness. And I believe I've neglected something. Number one, forgiveness isn't in my life. I don't really forgive people because I don't think I'm in any position to forgive anyone of anything. If you do something that you believe is against you, if you do something that I believe is against me, if you believe is against me and do something that I don't like, I will tell you about it. And if you continue to do that, after I'm not crazy about it or we discussed it, then I probably just won't surround myself by you anymore. And forgiveness never comes into it because we're all going to make mistakes. We're all going to screw somebody else. And even our best friends, you're most likely going to fuck over at least once in your life. And they're going to do the same to you. And that's just statistically how it's probably going to go. And either advertently or inadvertently. And to me, there's no forgiveness on that. It's either, you know, no apology needed. But, you know, apologies can be given. Some people need apologies, and that's cool. But as far as forgiveness comes into that, as far as how you regain my trust, you always have my trust. Because even if I trust you, you always can break that trust, you know. And if I don't know you, then you have my trust to begin with. So why not treat you as someone I don't know? You know, it's complicated, but it's my way of looking at things. But there is something that, you know, giving an apology for, like, you know, I broke your favorite grandma's noodle, and I was very, you know, I'm very sorry about that, and I really apologize because. It was an accident or I was doing something stupid, then I understand an apology, you know, and I understand saying you're sorry for someone's loss, that type of thing. So, you know, those words are in my vocabulary, just not as something that is needed for me to regain my trust in you. Let's say that. I don't think I've ever clearly explained that. I don't like to talk in absolutes, but there's no way. Again, you are a great guy. Jesus, thank you. And I love all your shows. Oh, man, thank you. Oliver from Germany. P.S. If you ever want to leave that crazy American land, you are welcome to come to us. Always looking for good IT personnel, as far as I know, with a smiley face. Well, thank you, man. And I don't know. How are your German keyboards over there? You must have those set. Do you have the sets on your keyboards and umlauts and things? Epsilon, right? Something like that. Konsnik learning mine ABC. I don't remember even that. I can't even say the ABC song in German. But, you know, Warum nicht auf Deutsch? That's what I always say. Thank you, Herr Oliver. I already talked about skeptic. Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of homes like this in Germany, but I really like our home, and I'd love to be able to put some balloons on it, like in Up, and take a trip over there. Yes, that's that. Thank you. Mike Vaughn. Mike wrote, 3 1/4. Of the way through this episode. And I thanked him for listening the whole thing, but he only made it 3/4 away. I don't know if the other quarter happened. I must say already, this will be a repeat listen. Wow. Hey, you know what's great about 4.5-hour shows? Oh, boy, it takes you through your workday if you listen at work. Thank you for all the brain food. Just can't figure out, is it 18 or 20% tip for lunch? Yep. I do 20%. I always do 20%. You know why? It's easier to figure out than 15%, because then you got a half over again. By the way, as I'm not as educated on some of the topics in this episode, I swore for a second I heard you say Marmaduke. But Marduke, yeah, that's right. That's what it would be, not Marmaduke. But I realized later in the episode that was not true. Who knows? There might be 5,000 people who worship great Danes in the world. Danes, Great Danes. I'm getting Greek on Marmaduke here. Great Danes. Yeah, I'm sure. Listen, isn't every pet owner a pet worshiper? We prostrate. Yeah, your prostate is the thing in your anus. The prostrate is the thing that you do. Never surrender anybody. Never surrender. Never prostrate yourself before You know, a book. There you go. Who knows? There might be prostrate yourself due to the overwhelming inhumanity by man to other men. But you know, that is a heavy load. That is something that cripples me to my knees. Inhumanity to humanity. There might be 5,000 people who worship Great Danes in this world. During a 5 a.m. commute, the brain wasn't functioning as well as possible. So it gave me a real kickstart to a awesome Wednesday. Thanks, Wiggly. Oh, you're more than welcome. You're more than goddamn welcome. Let's read this before I get to Youngdens, and of course, I'm going to end on a freaking death, right? Horrible, horrible. Hopefully, I can swing it around. Let me just read this. Let me read a quote first. Yeah, let me read a quote, which I don't normally do. First, let me read you my Google results. if you look up Elizabeth, first it goes to Elizabeth Shue, Elizabeth Smart, Elizabeth Short, Elizabeth Scott, and finally the Elizabeth I'm looking for, which I'm sure all those other Elizabeths are much more important in, and that's Elizabeth Stanton. And I'll just steal right from Wikipedia here. 1815 to 1902, American social activist, abolitionist, and leading figure of the early women's movement. Her Declaration of Sentiments presented the first women's right convention held in 1848 in Seneca Falls, New York, is often credited with initiating the first organized women's rights and women's suffragette movements in the United States. This is right after the American Civil War. The two female suffragette caused a schism in a women's... she was an outspoken supporter of the 19th century temperance movement. She was an outspoken supporter of the 19th century temperance movement. After the Civil War, Stanton's commitment to female suffragette caused a schism in women's rights movements when she, together with Susan B. Anthony, declined to support passage of the 14th and 15th Amendments in the United States. She opposed giving added legal protection and voting rights to African-American men, while women, black and white, were denied those same rights. So that's what she wanted. Women's rights, as well as those of African-Americans, as they are called now, but then, of course, the abolition of slavery. So referring to slaves. Which is, you know, a terrible disgrace on the American America, the American America, as well as displacing Native. You know, that's another. You know, it's going to take me off topic. return to American religious values, which of course would be the tribalism of Apache shamanism and things like this of other tribes. And that's, I'm sure, what Sarah Palin's talking about when she talks about return to American religious values. But here's a quote by Elizabeth Stanton. How can any woman believe that a loving and merciful God would in one breath command Eve to multiply and replenish the earth, and in the next pronounced a curse upon her maternity? I do not believe that God inspired the Mosaic Code or gave out the laws about women, which she is accused of doing. And, you know, that's always an astonishing thing as well. And this is, you know, like I said, somewhere between 1815 and 1902. If she wrote it when she was an embryo, then you know, a little bit before 1815. It's one of the most amazing things. I talked about this during a 4.5-hour show, which was the last episode, about how any woman can, or any descendant of slavery, could uphold this Bible. Just that is so replete with no denouncement of slavery. In fact, the ethics regarding beating your slave, if they die, then, you know, it's problematic. But if they don't, then it's okay. And, you know, if one of your slaves has served you for so long, you can let them go. But you keep their wife and children if they acquired them during their tenure with you. Yeah, it's just despicable. And then, of course, the bride price. If you rape a woman and she was a virgin, then you have to marry her and pay the bride's price. And, you know, the whole just terribleness of it. And even into the New Testament, of course, when, you know, women shut your mouth and things like this. 1 Timothy. Paul's disdain for women. yeah, if you must get married, okay. But, you know, a woman will only be find atonement through childbirth and things like this. So let me read you this other, let me read you this from this book here. And this is in the preface of it. And this, you know, I'm just going to read this and let me just, I hope this is right here. This is just completely out of context, but what the book is going to deal with as it progresses. The work naturally begins with the Eden myth and is followed by a consideration of the principal Old Testament legends showing their universality, origin, and meaning. Next will be found the account of the birth of Christ Jesus with his history until the close of his life upon earth, showing in connection therewith the universality of the myth of the virgin born crucified and resurrected Savior. Before showing the origin and meaning of the myth, which is done in chapter 39, convert the Roman numerals on the fly. We have considered, which wasn't hard, we have considered the miracles of Christ Jesus, the Eucharist, baptism, the worship of the Virgin, Christian symbols, the birthday of Christ Jesus, the doctrine of the Trinity, why Christianity prospered, and the antiquity of pagan religions, besides making a comparison of the legendary histories of Krishna and Jesus and Buddha and Jesus. The concluding chapter relates to the question, what do we really know about Jesus? So this is a book that you may think happened within the past, 6 or 7 years, as mysticism is being finally brought to the forefront of the 20th century, 21st century, I should say, and late 20th and early 21st century. This book is actually copyright 1882, my friends, and it is Bible myths and their parallels in other religions. Being a very long title. Being a comparison of the Old and New Testament myths and miracles with those of heathen nations of antiquity, considering also their origins and meaning. quite possibly a contender for the longest name of a book in history, and it is by T.W. Doane, D-O-A-N-E. With numerous illustrations, and this was the 7th edition, which probably has a copyright of 1910. But you know, this is so these sentiments, these meanings that you are seeing from Acaria S. and Murdoch and Robert M. Price, these are by no means new. Concepts, their takes on them are definitely refreshing and new and wonderful, and so happy for them. And of course, they also deal with more contemporary topics and books. And Robert M. Price is the best for his titles of his books. Of course, you know, instead of the Da Vinci Code, the Da Vinci Fraud, the case against, the case for Christ, I think that was one of his newest ones. Inerrant, the Wind, And of course, you know, there's I'm not, I think that might even be public domain, the book I just mentioned, if you remember what it was called. And definitely one that is public domain is the Free Thinkers textbook by Annie Besant. Or it might be pronounced Annie Besant. I'm not sure. It's B-E-S-A-N-T. And this was all stuff around 1890 as well. So the Free Thinkers textbook. Amazing stuff. And, you know, I mean, this is to imply that these type of questions didn't come up till the turn of the, you know, century there, the 20th century, is by no means what I'm implying. In fact, Robert M. Price is big on talking about the Gnostics around the time of Christ there as well, the year 0 CE and whatnot. But let's talk about somebody here, Diagoras of Milos, D-I-A-G-O-R-A-S of M-E-L-O-S, or as he's also known, Diagoras the Atheist, who was the son of Teleclitus, which really doesn't mean anything. I don't know why I wrote that down. But he was considered, once again, the first atheist. He spoke out of the... he spoke out against the Greek religions at the time, the Greek gods. He was supposedly told by his contemporaries at the time that, you know, you have to recognize the piety of the Greek gods, and you must worship the gods. And he was actually exiled from Greece, or rather from Athens. He actually was exiled to Corinth. So you know, he was chased out of Athens for that. Now, this, even though it doesn't really have to do with Christianity, of course, because it predates it, he was an atheist in 400 and something BC, you know, 5th century BCE. So 416 years before the formulation of the Christian religion. So, you know, it's nothing new. It happened before. I talk about Epicurus a lot. Of course, you also have Socrates and other very famous people. Things going on far BCE. And speaking out against the tribal religions of the time. When we read in the Old Testament, now, I've since come to the realization that what our buddy Rationalize used to always say in the chat room, in the stickam and stuff, and that is that, you know, isn't the whole Bible allegory? Well, definitely there were always allegorical elements that were blatant to me, like, you know, dissecting a woman and spreading her out, the 12 tribes, that type of thing. But now it's becoming more and more evident about just how much of the allegorical nature of the Old Testament and New Testament might be in relation to I mentioned it on the last episode, theological, what do you call, astrological theology, astrotheology. And this is what Acharias talks about a lot. Now, I haven't cross-referenced it, although she's done that for me. But I don't really understand all of it. There's still elements I have to definitely research if I so feel motivated. But you've always known about the 12, 12, 12, 12, 12, everything's 12. And that, of course, can easily relate to, well, it goes back to Sumerian times. Everything with them was 12 as well, which, you know, relates to our the 12 months and the 360, 12 through 60. I can't remember the terminology for cultures that are based around the numbers 12. And also the divisions of the astrological signs and things like this, arcs of degrees and whatnot. But my contention was that even the things that are allegorical are just horrible stories, not things for children to read. You know, they're terrible. Horse semen and giant dicks and everything like this. You know, so I don't care how allegorical it is. Even and I, you know, I did a 4.5 hour show on it. I don't want to keep going with that. But you know, there were people that spoke out against this stuff too, and there were other gods. And the Old Testament is all about you shall have no. It's right even in the commandments that they want in front of you know, our judicial offices. Somehow you're going to be able to rule better if you have no other god before God. His first commandment. As if other gods are real, you know, the thousands of gods in the pantheons of Hindu religion are real. Every single one of them, not just Ganesh and the popular ones, Krishna and of course you could say that, but I'm speaking more about like. Shiva and his wife Kali, those lovely, beautiful, vibrant images of Kali standing with her with swords in one of her hands and Shiva's head in the other, and just, you know, stepping on demons and horror, and lovely imagery, beautiful, you know. And you know, that's the type of things that type of imagery I love. And it's so out there and so wonderful. It's not, don't question it, keep it secret, keep the ugliness a secret. You know, it's like, bang, right there. Here's our ugliness, and isn't it beautiful? And peaceful. And, you know, basically peaceful community. I mean, there's always going to be bad factions in any type of religion throughout history, I'm sure, and wars and whatnot, and elephants flying through the air and shooting lightning bolts at people. But where was I? So questioning, skepticism, atheism. You know, that's right. The Old Testament, you know, you have to believe that other gods are real, because he doesn't want any god before him, especially any god dealing with a bull and any god dealing with Baal. And that's another thing, Baal and Balaam, Balaam's donkey. How about that story? Balaam's donkey is a wonderful, wonderful tale. It's about Balaam and his donkey. And God keeps playing these pranks on Balaam and making him think that the donkey's doing these pranks. And it gets to a point where Balaam's had it with his donkey doing all these, you know, nasty things to him. And he beats the living bejesus out of him. It was never Balaam doing it. God was playing pranks on him, but he blames his donkey, whips the crap out of his donkey. And his donkey turns around and says, must you whip me? Some said, why are you whipping me? The donkey's talking to him. I think I brought this up some other last episode. Anyway, it's just, you know, wonderful, wonderful imagery. And donkeys just splattered throughout ancient mythologies and religions. Very, very important, the mule, and asses and play to those ancient men, because that was their life, you know. They don't mention a tractor, you know. They don't mention anything that's relevant to us today. A USB splitter device. I'm sorry, a firewire splitter device shaped like a Godzilla that shoots a blue LED out its mouth. They don't talk about it. They don't talk about the G4 cube. They don't talk about photography, modern ukulele playing, other things that I look around my house. You know, they don't talk about, you know, Aquaman, Mego figures, 8-inch Mego figures. They don't talk about the Planet of the Apes movies. They don't talk about anything that we care about today in our society. Texting while driving, you know, things that could really help us. Let's get to our last letter here and cry. This one's from Young Dens. I don't think I really received any Wiggly World letters from Young Dens. A lot for dealing with pro wrestling, but... Hi, Wiggly. This is Young Dens, and I'm writing you this email because for the past few years, I've been questioning my beliefs with Jesus. The Bible says he will never leave us nor forsake us. But if that's the case, then he would have answered my prayers when I needed him, and he wouldn't have taken both of my grandmothers from me. My question to you is that if there really is a God, then why would he take away the innocent people from us and leave the killers, the molesters, the rapists, and the drug dealers here on earth and not spite them for what they do, or smite them is interchangeable with that. I would rather see them suffer as well. And like I said about justice and standing a trial, standing held responsible for your evil deeds. I'm reading all this into the pardon. If you really are his children, then why are some of our much needed prayers going unanswered? If you can answer this question of mine on a Wiggly World, I would greatly appreciate it. Well, sorry to sincerely, Young Dens. Well, sorry to make you wait till the end. Young Dens is a big go home, which I have no answer to. I rarely read more than the first line before I read it with you here, and I explore these things with you as they happen. First of all, any death is with somebody that we know, somebody close to us. Usually always sucks. It usually always sucks. Either, even if it's a joyful death, in meaning that in life they were suffering towards the end and horrible pain and horrible things to them till they finally were relieved of that by death, because our I don't know if I explored this a lot, but another aspect of the things that I was talking about with the Jehovah's Witnesses that led up to the last episode and the born-again type of lot, the evangelical type of lot on the Facebook that led to me making last episode. There's always a beneficial aspect that they seem to imply or tout. And when I think of the Christian religion, for some reason, I think of very little beneficial benefits to society at large from Christianity. Outside, now, I will, of course, say that some of the great scientific discoveries of not dark ages, but coming out of the dark ages, the age of enlightenment and things like this. Many, of course, of the scientists and astronomers and philosophers that were Christian at heart were searching for proof of creation, proof of a God, when they, of course, found out that it looks anything, it looks anything but like something that a perfect creation would be, like the elliptical orbits, like the Earth not being the center of the universe, like some of even the, our medical discoveries and things like this. But as far as modern discoveries go, pretty much I can see nothing but impediment of our social advancements, especially in the areas of stem cell research and things like this. Now, once again, this is a weighty topic. I think I talked about this a lot previous to the episode before, episode 129. But even if you're against embryonic stem cell research, which might be understandable for some, even though you don't understand where the embryos are coming. They're thinking that down the road we might actually get people pregnant so that we could perform these. These are embryos that were going to be in a dumpster instead of being more, I would think, more, not even respectfully, but I don't know if you could say praise on an embryo, but I mean, really, these things, if you don't know the difference between embryonic stem cells and stem cells from like adults, let's say, embryonic stem cells, the reason that they are beneficial is because they can sort of be turned into anything. They are before they are switched on. So the stem cells, they are before they are switched on, so they can become any type of organ. Or any type of organelle, or you know, whatever you want to use for, you can switch on the DNA, the genes, the elements of it to grow into anything, any organ that we might need. Whereas once again, I might not know anything, but the people, the opponents of this, don't even know that. You know, they want to stop to all stem cell research, even because they can't differentiate. They don't know anything about basic biology. That's the problem. That's the problem. They don't know biology from 101 up. And if you don't think this is true, look at what the right wing, who were voted into office, to take over the House and whatever else, and you know, to be judges and be whatever, our state representatives, our you know, Senate or whatever. Most people ran on a campaign of creating more jobs and whatever. Creating more jobs and getting the deficit in order. And of course, the way that this was vocalized and actualized was by trying to end payment to our teachers, end free radio that delivers topics of knowledge that we might not otherwise be exposed to, taking away the women's rights, because of course women are not capable of making moral decisions. That's how it was exercised. Those were the first things that went into action, and might still be going through. So if you think that there is not a want to impede progress, look around you right now. And in almost every major breakthrough that has impacted humanity in a positive way, in a way that you know, is measurable, was a gift, so to speak, to humanity, a fruit of our labors as a species to try to better ourselves. You can probably find some type of Christian organization that was trying to impede that, or did impede it. And I know that the Dark Ages is probably a horrible example because it's so far removed from us. But even look, I mean, look at witchcraft trying people. Those are just horrible things in the name of religions. But this is what can happen when you subscribe to dogmatic principles. And I know that's off topic to your question here, young Dens, and I don't mean to be disrespectful in any way, but death in any form usually always sucks. And that's how I went on the riff there. Because, you know, perhaps we would be to a place where we wouldn't have to experience this. And indeed, I think that at some point we will get to a place where the only deaths we might have to experience would be ones that we decide on when we've lived long enough and wish to slumber and cease to be. In a way, I think that religions and the want to live forever and the want for immortality have increased your burden of feeling as if your grandmothers were taken from you. If we go back to Epicurus, which is about 300 BCE, we see the beginnings of the scientific method. We see philosophy regarding death. Get you. This is from Epicurus. Get used to believing that death is nothing to us. For all good and bad consist in sense experience, and death is the privation of sense experience. Hence, a correct knowledge of the fact that death is nothing to us makes the mortality of life a matter for contentment, not by adding a limitless time to life, but by removing the longing for immortality. For there is nothing fearful in life for one who has grasped that there is nothing fearful in the absence of life. To break in, we were all dead at one time. Before we were born, we did not exist. To me, and obviously to Epicurus, when you die, you cease to be, just as before you were born. And you've heard accredited to Epicurus, of course, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may die. That's not meant to be something sad, you know. It's meant to enhance life. It's meant to cherish life. And once again, I'm not dealing with the Christian aspect of this here. I'm first dealing with the concept of death and the concept of this loss to you. Let me continue on with Epicurus. Maybe I'll be able to gather my thoughts better after. I'm getting a little hungry. Thus, he is a fool who says that he fears death, not because it will be painful when present, but because it is painful when it is still to come. So don't worry about death. When you die, you won't, it's you cease to be, and you will have no thoughts on death or not death. So don't be fearful of dying. You know, you could be fearful of having a painful death. No one wants to suffer, but don't be fearful because death is going to happen. Because once it does happen, you know justice in the slaying of Osama bin Laden, because he's dead. He doesn't have to stand trial. He doesn't have to do anything because he ceased to be. This ties in with it's only when you bring a soul into this, then you have these dilemmas, then you have these problems. There is no proof whatsoever of a soul. And I've talked at length about this. When we are anesthetized, our soul doesn't go to work for us. We are born. Our humans have giant noggins that still cause tremendous amounts of death and childbirths per year. It's still a very real problem, even in today's 21st century society. Why do we need such big heads to try to pass out of there? Because we are evolving as a species. We are getting more and more. We need that brain area. Okay, we wouldn't need brains. We wouldn't need giant brains. We wouldn't need anything if we had souls that do all the thinking for us. This is senseless to be these flesh bags when our souls could just as easily do it without us. And why do we have to come into existence at all if we are this eternal soul? Why is eternity only forward from after we're born? Why aren't we eternal before we are born? We wouldn't have to be born, and we're always these souls floating around. Not to mention that when we're anesthetized, we already get a glimpse of that. We're not floating around. Now, people have these experiences of feeling like they're out of body experiences and things like this, but these can also be simulated. These can be stimulated in the mind. These are quite part of our response system that can be purposefully stimulated, but we need to be conscious and our brain needs to have activity. There's a misunderstanding about what constitutes death, and I don't mean to be disrespectful now about your grandma's here, but there's a misconception about what constitutes death, and I started out unknowingly talking about metabolizing and metabolic functions, And we know that, and perhaps I'll get into this at a future time, because it deals with people being brought back from the dead, and then they think they have a religious experience, and these are all processes of protection from things, and what constitutes death, and things like this. And when you can declare, you can't, a doctor cannot declare someone dead in the case that they are under an influence of drugs, hyperthermia, or one other extenuating circumstance, because these can all interfere with checking to see if someone is actually dead or not. But we know when people are brain dead, they have no brain activity. They are simply alive because they are hooked up to a machine that is pumping oxygen to their brains and into their blood. They're on a breathing machine that is putting oxygen in there, and then another machine that is pumping it to their body. So their body is alive, but their brain is dead, and they are essentially dead. When our brain ceases to function, then we cease to be. And that's how that works. Or else, like I said, we'd be floating around, we'd be walking around, we'd be doing other things if we didn't need our brains. We wouldn't have to have giant brains to, ploop out of a thing. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not our whole bodies. I still consider myself this whole thing. My heart, my vessels, my vascular system, my respiratory system, all that. That's all me. And I'm cool with that. That has nothing to do with ego. Ego is in the brain. Everything else that we experience is all in the brain. Our reality is our own. Our reality is perspective, personal perspective, and that's it. That's all we can experience. But they're all functions of the brain. So when your brain stops, there's nothing to... The only sense of loss is to the people around. The people that loved what that person represented. But that person always came out of this earth. That person wasn't created out of magic unicorn dust. That person was composed of the same things that still exist in this universe. We are constantly being bombarded with, I speak about this all the time, but all different types of rays, particles. We're exchanging our particles with the particles around us. In fact, when you trace things down to their smallest atoms, below that to quarks, below everything, you really can't find that atom, that thing that can't be divided anymore. You really can't find any matter whatsoever. You only find vibrations. And energy, frequency, and boy, I need food. That's what I need to metabolize right now. But everything is just a vibration. The only reason I can't put my hand through this desk in front of me is because the desk is vibrating too fast, as are what my the things that my hand is vibrating at, these frequencies. There's plenty of things passing through us now that have a frequency that can pass through us. Gamma rays, photons, light, light bouncing off of us, light going through us, the radiation from the sun. I am composed of all the elements that have come out of this earth, as are our grandparents before us. The pain I feel from losing my granny and grandpa is the longing for them to be around me. It is from me. That pain is from me. I didn't finish Epicurus' quote here. But the wise man neither rejects life nor fears death, for living does not offend him, nor does he believe not living to be something bad. And just as he does not unconditionally choose the largest amount of food, but the most pleasant food, so he savors not the longest time, but the most pleasant. He who advises the young man to live well and the old man to die well is simple-minded. not just because of the pleasing aspects of life, but because the same kind of practice produces a good life and a good death. Be happy throughout your entire life. Be happy through this dance. Don't be happy for the person that can still jump around. Be happy for the guy in a wheelchair if he likes being. Be happy if you're in a wheelchair. You know, unless you're so degraded that you no longer want to live. But why not want to live? Why not, if you could still experience life in some fashion, grab a hold to that experience. Maybe you can't see anymore. Maybe you can't hear anymore. I surely can't see very well. But that doesn't stop me from looking with the eyes I still got at boobies and bungholes and porn and all that good stuff, you know, and flowers and sunsets, and you know, which I shouldn't have said that because I don't believe in sunset. But, you know, what we call a sunset, trees, beauty, enjoy life while you are living. The entire stretch. And these are things we always forget. But when I miss my grandparents, I just recently found out that one of my girlfriends, someone I cared about so deeply, one of the nicest people in the world, and I so longed for her for many years. Very good friends with her family. They treated me like their son. I would go over her house when she wasn't even home, waiting for her to come home from college, and hang out with her dad in the basement, and, you know, tool around with different projects he was working on in his little shop that he had set up. I loved her so deeply, and I found out that she died in December, and it was devastating to me. I had lost contact with her a few years back. She had moved to Arizona with her husband, and she was in one of those little pixel visions I released on YouTube. And my friend told me about her. I don't know if you knew her. I knew her. I loved this girl. And my sadness is for the world, because I would have loved to share her brightness with the world. And my sadness is for what I believe she represented in that loss. But my advice always to people that have lost their loved ones and are usually, surrounded by popular belief systems of, you know, she's in heaven and it's a better thing and things like this, is always, when confronted by things like this and you no longer believe that, is to just respond with your fond memories of that person and your fond memories of who that person was to you. Grieve, man. Grieve when you have to. And if you don't grieve right away, don't be sad about that. Allow yourself to grieve in your own way, in your own time. And let us celebrate their lives. And if you celebrate and that makes you sad and it makes you cry, that's all right. But remember the celebration. Remember why that tugs on your heartstrings. Because you love them. And then love. And then love. And then let yourself love. And you don't need any hocus pocus and magic words to feel those emotions. But don't be set up by them. People say, well, you know, it comforts people. And once again, I would never say to the Chizzy's grandmothers now. Chizzy has a nanny and a Graham. And I would never say to them when they talk about heaven and Jesus and God and blessings, I would never say to them there is no such thing. But people talk about it comforts, you know, people to believe in these things. But to me, it's an insult to the celebration of life. Because there's so much more there than just replacing it with magic. The magic is the reality. That, to me, is the true magic. And they never pass on. How this universe was represented by them, and I don't mean to get new agey on everybody, but it is the scientific fact. We are this thing. We are this whole thing. And to say manifest is a very, you know, new agey thing to say. But we are a manifestation. We are not the entire universe manifested, but we are an extension of that. We are, just as anything else is that we could see in this world, in this universe, a star, planets, if you ever went to Arizona and to the desert and looked up and you see the nebulae. These are things we don't see on the East Coast. These are things we don't see on the West Coast. We don't see those clouds that aren't clouds, that are the freaking universe, those colors and those beautiful things like that. So vibrant, so close to us. Things that may be taken for granted that by people that only live there. They don't realize. We are just as much a part of that than anything else is. And that's why people could just go kill people, because they think, go to heaven, they're immortal, who cares? I don't value them. It's all me, 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 it's all greed, and they're dead, so what? They're somewhere else. They're not somewhere else. They have ceased to be. That unique expression of this universe is no more, is no longer with us. And that's why I value life so much. And that's why I didn't dance in the street about Osama bin Laden. But I miss my grandparents. I miss my dad. He killed himself. Might be better, considering the, horrible person he was becoming. Who knows how much more damage he could have done. But suicide's a whole nother topic. I'm not going to go into that now. But the people that are affected by death are those that are still living. And of course, but let us celebrate that. Let us understand the world. Now, into the more despicable aspects of this. My question that is there really God? Then why would he take the innocent people and leave the killers, molesters, rapists, and drug dealers here on earth? Well, that is a problem, isn't it? Because unfortunately the God of the Bible, and especially Jesus, the person that you would think is the Prince of Peace, is one of the most despicable things, and I'll explain. Speaking of justice, there really is no justice in the Bible. The Old Testament says he's a vengeful God. I am a vengeful God. I am a God. I am jealous. And you can apologize about what he meant by jealous as much as you like. But there's no doubt about it. He says, you worship me and I will extract vengeance upon your enemies, upon the other tribes. I am not their God. I am your God. And I am like a magic genie. I will blink. Yes, master, boink. And, smite your enemies. Do what I say, and I'll help you become, rule over these people. Kill the women and children and men, but save the virgins for yourself to do as you wish with them. These are the elements of the thing that we call the Holy Bible, unfortunately. That is part of that sentiment. But it's borrowed sentiment. It's not even, it's plagiarized. The New Testament is wrote with Midrash, and I speak about this with Robert M. Price when I had him on, and I would love to have him on again. There is no balance. There is no balance for the guilty do not get punished, and the innocent mostly suffer. Look at when we go to animals. When we go to animals that are lost in brush fires, acts of nature, what sin have these animals done? When we talk about bestiality in the Bible, it says you have to kill the animal that the person had sex with. What did that animal do? Did it ask for it? Come on. There is no balance of justice, even in the Bible. You talk about reality. Why do these killers and molesters and rapists and drug dealers, why are they, get off scot-free? They do. Because there is no justice in it. It's not a fair world, unfortunately. Because I can say because we live by mystical belief systems, but that's not the case. That may be the case in some parts, but because we have these brains and they are fragile and we can understand the neurology of the criminal mind. Now, why they're able to prosper and why are they able to not be caught? And because we need to work on that. We need to work on that. We need not to protect. There are people protecting these people instead of doing what's right. And trying to make our society better. There's a lot of, there's people that won't speak out about what they believe is right and wrong. And once again, you can't say this is right, this is wrong, and, everyone picks up on it because they feel threatened to. Set by example of your interpretation of right and wrong. And if other people think it's a good idea, they will follow. But you would think in a place with an almighty deity, there would be this type of justice. You do wrong and you will be punished. Not in an afterlife. Now. That's how it should be working. If you do good, you get good. People believe in karma and they misrepresent what the word karma actually means. Karma is just a verb. It doesn't mean a comeuppance. Getting back what you put into it. Because as you pointed out, that's not what happens. The guilty do not always suffer. It is the innocent that suffer. And sometimes they suffer till they cease to be. And now they cannot have that chance to not suffer. And children in the Bible completely murdered. Were they guilty as well? Slain of the firstborn, the flood, the children of Sodom and Gomorrah. All these atrocities. They were innocent, and God killed them. He murdered them. But Jesus is the most maniacal, because he does preach peace, and then what are we to believe from it? As religion progressed, even though it may not have been written there, some of the later writers of the Bible certainly seem to believe that you would suffer hellfire. You're going to be killed. You're going to be put to death if you do not say the magic words of I love Jesus. I mentioned last episode, how is that a choice? But you could choose. That is a choice. How the hell is that a choice? That's no choice. Choose to worship me freely or I'll kill you. That is insane to think that is a choice of any type. Jesus died so that all sins may be forgiven. Well, did he forgive sins or not? We still suffer in childbirth, the women do, to suffer the pangs of the Old Testament, the curse that God put upon women, to suffer pangs in childbirth and once a month. Didn't do a very good job of forgiving sins. But then I guess he meant may. They may be forgiven, but they may not. Why do prayers go unanswered? Well, if you read in the Bible, he says if you believe, that it is stated unequivocally. And I don't have the passage before me, but I'm sure I could find it quite easily as you can you on the internet. God will hear and do and grant all of your prayers. It doesn't even say some of your prayers or whatever. It says anything that you ask, you shall receive. Anything that you ask, you shall receive. And that's not a misinterpretation or anything or out of context. In the Lord, anything you ask, you shall receive. Obviously, it's not true. You probably had more faith than anybody, as did I. Unshakable faith. Now it's said that, you know, you say a prayer and if God wants it to be so, then it will be so. Because it's for the greater good, you know. It's for the greater good. What God sees is the greater good. Now, how can he see what's a greater good? He must know the future. Then, if he knew the future, he would knew Adam and Eve were going to, you know, fuck up. It says right in Genesis that he was looking for Adam and Eve. He went down to the garden. He's looking around for him. He's calling out for him. But they hid. And he's like, where are you guys? Duh. And this is what God gets for putting all this crap in a book. If you want anyone to know it, he want to put it in a... No one reads anymore. You should have made a comic. At least some people would have read them. But then now, comics are dying too. So, meh. Should have made it like, you know, Singing with the Stars, the Bible. There you go. He has your karaoke Bible songs. If we are really his children, then why are some of our much needed prayers going unanswered? I don't have an answer for that. Except that I have the same question. And I've answered it in a much more fulfilling manner. In a way that makes a lot more sense. And that is unfortunately because this is another myth. Diagoras was speaking out about mystery cults that were around 300 years BCE. Mysticism, mystery cults. That's what that's all about. Jesus is an amalgam of not just Midrashic retellings of Old Testament in more Grecian settings and mystery religions that were popular at the time. You can't take Jesus out of his environment. This time period was rote with these type of heroic characters. Very, very popular at the time. And most of our understandings of religiosity, of the Christian religion, I should say, of Christology, weren't put into place until 800 years after. You know, 400 to 800 years after. The Council of Nicaea and the early ecumenical councils were in the time of Constantine. What time is that? 3rd century? 4th century? 200 to 300 years after BC, hundreds of years, understandably. You know, hundreds of years. Of this, there is no doubt. Voting on the divinity of the Christ character, whether or not he was divine. It was not known for 200 to 300 years after this character was said to have walked around the earth. And then it was voted upon whether or not he was. And I have talked about it in the last episode, even Paul, you know, would Jesus have wanted us to still be doing this? The authenticity, the importance of still keeping the dietary laws. He made the decision, Paul. You know? That's supposed to be around that contemporary time. Yeah, sure, you know, 40 years after, it's when Paul was supposed to be writing, but even that's, you know, wrong. It probably was second century stuff. And Epicurus spoke out against, well, not against, but about not only the pantheon of gods, but about monotheistic religions as well. I cannot help but turn to Epicurus and his problem of evil. And I recommend, you know, Wikipedia, look up problem of evil. Look up problem of evil. You could just even probably Google that and get there. And I cannot help but turn to Epicurus's statement on evil, which I've read many times. Is God willing to prevent evil but not able? Then he is not omnipotent. Is he able but not willing? Then he is malevolent. Is he both able and willing? Then whence cometh evil? Is he neither able nor willing? Then why call him God? So, I don't think I necessarily... let me just reread this here and make sure I got everything. I think I have in the only way I know how, and that is that, you know, I really don't know the answers to these questions, because many of these questions no longer pertain to... I have a different approach to these. I have a different approach to the answers I have to these questions. I get there a different way, and I think what is important here is that as a society, as a culture, as humans, as what we have come to be, we need to promote not necessarily a single set of ethics, but we need to be more ethical. And the golden rule precedes Christianity. It's most likely Egyptian. It was definitely promoted a lot by the Egyptians, and it most likely precedes all of that as well, and into the Sumerian times, and perhaps even before recorded history. And that is to treat others as you wish to be treated. To me, this is a way to live. I try to be respectful, and I'm a wise ass too, you know. But I hope that the joke comes through. You never can know. It can go horribly wrong when you try to be witty and enjoy life like that. So I think that's really all I have to say on it. I think that as a society we need to question what and why we believe. I think we need to be more respectful and well thought out on the rules we put into place and why we put them into place, and not hang to dogmatic anecdotes. My mother told me so, science. My mother told me so, ethics. My mother told me so, laws. I think it's time to put those aside. The people that try to do these things are ridiculed. I got to bring Ron Paul into this, although I don't agree with everything he says. Although I don't believe, you know, I mean, who's going to believe in everything? But unfortunately, a lot of the things that he puts forward are laughed at, and, you know, he doesn't have a chance. Like the end to laws involving drugs and narcotics and things like this. I think it's right. I think the responsibility belongs on the people to be responsible human beings. He said it during the debates. If we legalized heroin tomorrow, how many people in this room are going to go out and do heroin? None. Because if you wanted to do heroin, you'd already be doing it and ruining your life. We have to put responsibility back on the people. And this is something that is not put across. Personal responsibilities. I didn't learn that in high school. I didn't learn it in grade school. This is something that should be taught. This is something that our grandmother should be whispering in her crib. Not the "I love Jesus for the Bible tells me so" nursery rhymes and stuff like that. It should be instilled into us, personal responsibility and conscientiousness. Then we could reap the rewards of that. Are we going to go wrong? Of course. Of course. But what a better place it would be if people were held accountable for their actions. Obviously. So, you know, my approach to this letter was just how I began, with an examination of not only death, but of life. Does it mean to be alive? Those are the questions that I want to explore. I find fascinating. And that comes with an exposition of the closest we could get to truth at this time. You know what I mean? I mean, that doesn't come from hiding things. That doesn't come from being secretive about things. It's amazing what Constantine said. Saint Constantine, one of the church fathers. I blew it. Saint Augustine. "That which is known as the Christian religion existed among the ancients and never did not exist from the beginning of the human race until the time when Christ came in the flesh, at which time the true religion, which already existed, began to be called Christianity." So, I mean, this... Augustine was a Platonist. These things are fascinating to me. All mythology is, and it's an expression of humanity. I enjoy that, but I recognize it for what it is. I recognize, to me, you know, to me. Just as I recognize my thoughts are only my thoughts to me. And they are only thoughts. But I am more fascinated with what we share in common with this whole universe. I am more fascinated by celebrating life. I am more... focused on what life is now. In the beginning, I mentioned that a lot of these shows will rotate around Christianity, but once again, this is what's popular now. If it was more popular to do the UFO thing at this time, I'd probably be banging on that door because I like to question things. I like to ask questions, and I like things to be working. And to me, question asking is making things work. And that is more my obsession, is making sure that things work. More than the collecting, all going full circle to why I like building things and challenging myself. And the ability to get things working when there are very cryptic instructions, and knowing what questions to ask, or having to resolve the problem myself because no one's run into these things because I chose to do things in a different way. That's what makes my Wiggly World happen. Introspection. I unfortunately am self-taught in almost everything I do, but I try to gather things from what people say. And, you know, that's what the school's supposed to do for us. Hopefully it does nowadays. And nowadays you need to go to college, and I don't want to try to dissuade anyone from going, but please go to college, get a higher education. I don't have one. My friends, that is it for today. Thank you. I hope that I did justice to my topics today. I actually wanted to play the Fist iteration song at the end of today's episode, and forgot that last episode I wanted to do like my song Belief and stuff like that from when I believed. There might have actually been another tune, I can't recall, but I forgot about that, and I played Fist last show. I think I'm still going to take the cheap way out and end on that today. So if you already heard it, just fast forward. Or maybe I should end on Project Y, which is now available in iTunes in a working version. Or maybe something else. No, I'm going with a song called Iteration. I wrote it for Fist for their 2011 theme song. And that's what I'm going to end with. My friends, if you like this show, then, tell some people why you like it. Tweet it. Tweet it if you like. But put in there your own personal testimony to it. Maybe try to get some people to listen, because, like I mention every time, there has to be a balance. And if there's no feedback, once again, not disrespecting these wonderful letters that I read today, but there's a lot of effort into, and a lot of taking away of my life into this. And I do it of my own free, I take responsibility for myself. That's why I do this. But it needs to be stated that, you know, I of course would like to reach a wider audience and perhaps get a reflection back from that audience. I'm so thankful for this family that I'm talking to now. You are my family, friends. That's it for me, everybody. Thank you so very much. I'd love to be able to, you know, go on a show and talk about things. Someone else's show, too. Take care, buddies. I'm Wiggly, a Wiggly World.